Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, helping product managers become product masters. Listen and get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. Each week, I provide training to product managers and innovators through this podcast, helping product managers become product masters. I also created the Idea Framework e-course. The e-course is how product managers build their base in knowledge that enables them to become product leaders. Knowing the reasons why product management processes are the way they are, and more importantly, what to change for different situations. People have used the IDEA framework to cut their product failure rate in half, which increases their product success rate and their own success in the process. The IDEA framework e-course is open now for new signups, but it's closing soon. This is the first time it's been open since February of last year, and the e-course closes again on January 23rd. The e-course covers the entire spectrum of product management: ideation, develop, evolve, and accelerate, or IDEA. It includes online lessons and resources, interactive live webinars, and a discussion community for networking and collaborating with other product managers. And the e-course is designed to be self-paced to accommodate any schedule. I have trained numerous product managers on these ideas and these concepts, and I know this is the best way for product managers to build their skills and be product leaders in their organization. Check it out for yourself before the e-course closes on January 23rd by going to theeverydayinnovator.com/idea. That's IDEA. Now for the interview, I'm very interested in how innovation can be made better, and one category of tools is related to team performance. Higher performing teams can create products that produce higher value. One specific tool is called Group Flow, which was the topic of a paper published by the International Council of Systems Engineering titled Group Flow, the Genesis of Innovation. Its author is Lori Buss, who I interviewed to learn how teams can create group flow. When I discovered Lori's work, I felt like I found a kindred spirit of sorts based on how she describes innovation, which is that innovation is the key to the continued growth of established economies, not only for the creation of new designs, products, services, and markets, but also for the development and retention of top-performing employees. Lori has a degree from UCLA in aerospace engineering and is highly regarded in the international satellite industry, working with numerous large organizations in spacecraft design and test, launch, operations, and many other aspects that require innovative thinking. She also has a new book coming out in the second quarter of 2017 with a working title called Brain Power Redemption. In this interview, Lori shares concrete steps to facilitate group flow, which includes four elements that are easily remembered using the FLOW acronym: F for focus, L for location, O for roundtable, and W for tools. I expect you'll find the discussion valuable for improving product team performance. You'll also find a summary of the discussion at theeverydayinnovator.com/107. Enjoy the interview. Hi, Lori. Thanks so much for joining the Everyday Innovator podcast today.
Thank you, Chad. I'm really thrilled to be featured here.
So this is kind of fun. I just want, if you could share with listeners where you are, because you have this beautiful setting behind you. And sorry, everyone, you can't see this. We're doing this through video, but obviously just audio is being shared. But what is out your window here?
Well, out my window is the California Redwoods. I'm up at our family cabin in Wawona, which is about half hour south of Yosemite Valley. It's actually in the park boundaries. There was a set of cabins that are now vacation rentals. Scenic Wonders is the vacation rentals we use. Up a little shameless plug there. And the homes were here, used by forest rangers, and around the old Wawona Hotel, which was built, I believe, in the 1920s or so, and the golf course. And it was here before the boundaries of the park were extended out. So I'm up here doing a little mini 10-day work retreat, which is really nice. If I just no schedule, no place to be, and crank it out on some work. And we're actually, as I'm looking out the window, we're expecting 3 days of rain, which is thrilling for someone from Los Angeles, where we haven't had any rain in about 3 or 4 years.
Very dry. Yep.
It's very dry, and unfortunately, and starting to affect the redwood trees. But mm-hmm. looking forward to seeing some of that water come down.
And if you have work to do, that's a good place to hunker down some and get the work done, and the trees will enjoy it. I love the redwoods. When we were out on our big RV trip a few years ago, we went to Yosemite and spent some time down in Santa Cruz too, where the redwoods are quite large, and really enjoyed that part of the country. Thanks for joining us from your getaway a little bit here.
Thank you. Absolutely.
We're going to dive in to talk about the use of groups and innovation. So let's kind of just get set with this. You have a topic that you refer to this as group flow, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But when it comes to actual the nature of innovation, and so in our context as product managers and innovators, we're talking about how do we create more value for customers. And there is sometimes there's probably myths around what actually goes on. You know, this discussion about, is it a group activity that's most effective and efficient? Or is it really the lone wolf, you know, that lone genius who goes off and is creative by themselves that is really the driver of innovation? What's your perspective? What's been your experience with the group versus the lone wolf?
Today, obviously, the group working together is almost mandatory for two reasons. One is our systems are so complex that nobody can see and understand all the market dynamics, understand all the engineering and product design, see into the future, aligning strategic planning of the company with predictions for the future. And then also the thing to take into account too, where groups have become very important today and working together, is that the younger generations, the Gen Y, Gen Z, they are very team focused. They are a social generation. The social media did not create them. They created social media because they are a very social generation. And so they are very motivated by working with the team and working in groups. And so as they begin to come more and more into the workforce and take over for the baby boomers who are retiring, they have a big emphasis on teams. So those are the two forces that we have today that really drive groups to work together. But even if you look throughout history, their most major innovations, inventions that became very important to history were done by collaboration. Obviously, you had Edison, who had his team at Menlo Park, the machinists, physicists, engineers who worked together on his inventions and ideas. There was, Einstein said he stood on the shoulders of giants. They had peer collaboration, international collaboration. Monet, even with painting, he worked for about 15 years with his peers as they progressed and developed and refined Impressionism. So even when we kind of idolize.
Yes,
there we go.
Lift up as idols.
Idolize single figures. And of course, we still do that today. Steve Jobs is a prime example.
Sure.
But he wasn't an engineer. He wasn't a designer. He could have never gotten his vision out without the brilliant people at Apple that worked for him. So we have to do things even more today for innovation in groups. Historically, that's how it's happened for the most part, and now even more today.
Yeah, those are really good examples too. And a lot of us, because we're of that generation of Steve Jobs, having brought us the iPod and the iPhone and the Mac and all these things that lots of people absolutely love. And I have an iPhone in my pocket, of course. It does take a team of people to actually accomplish these things, and a team doing different sort of things, not all doing the same thing. And you talk about the importance of this thing called group flow as part of teams, and that's a way to really harness this innovative power of groups. So let's start with what this flow is, right? We run into this term every now and then. I know there was a book written a while ago called Flow. Talk about this nature of flow for us.
Flow is a state that you're in. It's like being in the zone. You're doing something you really enjoy. You lose track of time. Usually people find it by doing some artistic endeavor, painting, doing music, whether alone or with a group, dancing, sports, surfing, basketball game, so forth, playing chess. Some people do find flow in strategic planning and doing a lot of work activities. And so it's a very creative space. It's a very engaging space. We like to be in that place, and we're uninterrupted. And so if we can take kind of individual flow to the group level to help us get into that very engaged, very focused and concentrated and creative space, that I believe is a way to create conditions that in which creativity and innovation are much more likely to appear.
So group flow is this notion of kind of being in this really sweet spot, right? Of enjoying the work that you're doing. And at the same time, because you're enjoying it, being more creative and focused on the work. Is that fair?
Right.
Okay. When it comes to the conditions that really make this possible, that make flow possible, what do we need to establish to experience flow?
I'll start first with individual flow, because mm-hmm. I think most people can identify with that. It's kind of four general conditions. One is that we need to have a goal. So obviously with sports, it's the goal of the rules of the game and how you make the score, the points on the board. For things like gaming is unfortunately for most people, because it tends to be a waste of time and not very enriching, is a place that we get into flow quite a bit. Time just suddenly, where did those 2 hours go? But you know the goal, and the second condition is that you're getting feedback on your progress towards the goal. So again, with sports and gaming, that's very rapid. If you're doing solo sports and artistic endeavors, I mean, surfing is a great one. You're focused on the wave. You're judging, you know, whether you can take the wave, and then you get the feedback of whether your skills match the strength of the wave or not, which leads me to the third condition, which is that your skill set is a match. If you're doing something that's too hard for you, you'll get frustrated. If you're playing with NBA basketball players, you're probably not going to get the ball very often. And as soon as you do, it's going to be taken out of your hands. And so that can be very frustrating. And yet you don't want it too easy, because you'll get bored. If you're playing with 8-year-olds, you're going to get bored pretty quickly. So having the activity that you're doing be a challenge, but not overly challenging and too difficult to where you're not making any progress and not getting that feedback. And I like surfing, because you are out there, you're checking the waves and trying to assess, can I take this wave or should I let it pass? And then you get the immediate feedback. And the same with artistic endeavors as well. I'm a painter, and so in painting, as you know, it might be more intrinsic and more of an intuitive feeling, but am I doing something that I think is a value that is aesthetically pleasing to me? Or if I'm dancing, how does my body feel? Or making music, whether alone or maybe with a cover band, jazz ensemble, and so forth. So, you know, first kind of having a goal, knowing what you're trying to achieve, then getting feedback, getting fair as quickly as possible, because then we know we're progressing towards our goal, having the skill set be a match. And then the fourth one is having the space to fail, having the space where we're not interrupted. You know, when we're playing basketball and sports and dancing or jamming with the band, to have the cell phone ring is immediately going to lose the concentration and break us out of that enjoyment. It's very hard to get back into it. So having space where we're not rushed, where we're not interrupted, and where there is room for failure. It's like, okay, we didn't play that riff of music real well. Let's try it again, or catch the next wave, and so forth.
When you're talking about that, I thought of different you know, activities I've been involved in. And so even though I'm not a software developer, I have developed software and been part of software development teams. And I just say I'm not a software developer because I'm not particularly good at it compared to other people that are really good at it. But doing that work in software, you do, I think it's appealing to people because you get to see the immediate feedback, right? You make a change, you compile it or run it through the script interpreter, and you see what you did.
Yeah.
And then I noticed in my own career and several other people that were involved in kind of the software world or IT space, we really enjoyed doing physical activities at the same time. You know, like I went off and built a house once upon a time. And some of my friends actually became home builders. They left the software space. And I think it's a different kind of tangible feedback, right? Not just seeing it on the screen. But at the end of the day, there's new framing and, you know, there's a roof on, there was a foundation that got poured. And it's just encouraging to see that feedback. And we all kind of need that. When it comes to flow in that, I don't know about you. So you're up there at your retreat right now to try to hunker down and get some work done too, which I assume involves writing. And for me, I'm a writer who will procrastinate as long as possible until I absolutely have to get it done, right? And it's usually that first 15 minutes or so that I'm just really struggling between, okay, I got to do this. How am I going to get started on this? And at some point, I do kind of get into a flow where time starts passing quickly and I just get the work done. And I don't know if that's actual flow the way you described it, but it is a different state I experience where I can work much more productively than I was.
It's something that I have experimented with quite a bit, because I can have something, like you were saying, writing a blog or doing some sort of work that's not time critical. I'm not needing to respond to a customer request and right away and so forth. So it's one of those highly important but not urgent tasks that can easily be pushed out. And I've experimented with letting that procrastination be okay, mm-hmm. because I find that I can sit there and it's just not coming. And with all my being, I don't want to be doing it. And then a few days later, suddenly get something done in half hour, 45 minutes that before was taking me over 45 minutes just to get a couple sentences written and so forth. Sometimes it just, the inspiration comes out of a book or suddenly somehow I'm just available and in that zone and the ideas are coming. So I've experimented a little with that. As we get further into the conditions and the realities of group flow in the corporate sector, where we don't have infinite time, we do have customers and requirements that we need to answer to. But finding that balance of when's it okay to have some procrastination, I often address a question that comes up is people say they get very creative when they are under pressure, when that deadline is a couple hours away or tomorrow. And we've all done that since we had book reports due in sixth grade, wait till the last minute. And my mom and I always remember the War of 1812 because it took me till 2 a.m. to get that report written. But this idea that creativity needs some space and needs time. And a lot of times we feel very creative when we're under pressure, but the fact of the matter is that we are, the research has shown that we're not as creative. And it's yes, we made a decision. Yes, we came up with an answer when we were under the gun, but was it the best answer? Was it the most creative? And this is a lot of times where starting to implement things like rapid prototyping and starting to work out the ideas and the innovation and addressing them, but not under intense time pressure. Mm-hmm. And again, not every decision, every idea needs to be perhaps taken under this group flow. But I think your listeners know when they are looking for it and when it's time to just get the work done. And if it's, you know, B or C work, that's good enough. It doesn't need to be AA plus work. So.
All of us, you know, one of my hats is teaching university courses in product management and innovation management. And I occasionally share with students who are going through some kind of life crisis at the time they're taking the class. You know, all of us are in the same boat. We can only do the best we can with the resources available. And often time is our limiting resource. And you do the best you can with what you have available. When it comes to flow, I like to make the connections to the group a little bit stronger. So how does this really manifest itself in a group? Because now you have the dynamics between, you know, maybe you and I individually recognize there's some things that we can procrastinate on to make ourselves actually get something done. But in a group, those dynamics are different. And how do you get an entire group working in flow together?
There are some external conditions that you can set as a manager, as a leader. And then there are tools that you can use once you get the group together, you've isolated them and turned off the cell phones and are ready to work. So I'll talk about all of those. I usually, especially when I'm working with people who don't have charts or any visuals in front of them, I try to break it down into a simple acronym I just call FLOW, F-L-O-W.
That should make it easier for us to remember. So I appreciate using FLOW. That's great.
I used all my creative capabilities to come up with that. So the first one, the F of FLOW, would be the focus, and sometimes kind of tongue in cheek. And if HR is okay with it, kind of, you know, WTF, what's the focus? Mm-hmm. A lot of times we're in meetings and we're starting to pull out the phone and the laptop because we're disengaging because we've lost our focus. And this goes back to, we need a clear goal. And if you again, think of the sports and gaming and so forth. So there are a number of ways to define the focus. So it can be, how do we solve this problem? That is usually where most people start and end. But I want to encourage your listeners to maybe expand the focus a little bit. Instead of just fixing the problem, which when you define a specific goal, it can really limit the group, especially when you're after innovation. So set a focus that's maybe more expansive. So recently I was working with a corporation that does in-flight entertainment systems. And so the example I gave them was saying, and you know, instead of looking at what's our next gen entertainment system on aircraft, what does an entertainment system do? Well, it keeps people occupied, satisfied, nullified, happy, sitting in a tiny seat for 16 hours. So how else could you keep somebody occupied and happy in a seat? And expanding that vision a little bit. And you put little massage chairs in there, aromatherapy pillows or something. You know, so obviously your in-flight entertainment is your cash cow, and you may not be suddenly going into aromatherapy products. But expanding that vision, looking at the system as a whole, not just where the breakdown occurred, can be really valuable. You may be able to come up with ideas for how to change the system or the process to where the problem they experience can't even physically ever happen again. And so you've taken that out of the equation. Another example I had was decades ago, but I love this example, was a elevator company was hearing from their clients that they needed faster elevators. And they took a look at that and they said, okay, why do we need faster elevators? Well, customers are complaining the elevators are too slow. So the question then became, how do we make the customers happier? How do we make them think that the elevators aren't quite as slow? And they ended up putting, and you'll see this still today, mirrors at the where you wait for the elevators and inside the elevators, because people like to look at themselves and check if their shoes are shiny and hair and makeup is good as they go to work or leave work. And by distracting people, there were no longer complaints that the elevators were too slow. So instead of getting into technical redesign and testing and qualification and installation and so forth, they put in mirrors.
I love that example. I'm glad you shared it. I was about to share it if you did it, because I thought it tied in so well with your entertainment system example, because I'm familiar with that story too. And all of this gets to the nature of framing the problem, and how broadly we frame it really impacts how we start thinking about solutions. And when we start off, especially in a group, we're really better served by broader framing the actual problem to help not limit our thinking right from the beginning.
I'll introduce another way to frame it is something I learned in the last year or two is doing a parallel focus, which I find is very beneficial, getting us out of our patterns. And so, for example, if you need to, you're convincing your customer, client, or maybe the next department over, trying to convince them of something. Mm-hmm. Instead of having it focused on that client or the marketing division or engineering division or whoever you're butting heads with, take it out of the work setting and try a parallel focus. And perhaps as we're coming up on the holidays, how do I convince my sister-in-law to do Thanksgiving at her house this year? I don't want to be doing all the dishes and and making most of the cooking and cleaning her kids' crayon marks off my wall on the Friday after Thanksgiving. And even though we've been doing Thanksgiving in my house for 10 or 15 years, how do I convince her to do Thanksgiving at her house this year? And look at that and get ideas around that focus. Might give you ideas on how do I convince a client to buy up from the product they're currently purchasing, or how do I get engineering to align with our needs?
Yeah, to change that context.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, so we got the F out of the way, focus.
Next L is for location. Optimally, your group would be co-located. We've seen this time and again whenever there's a major project development. I mean, it started way back before the 1940s, but in the 30s and 40s, you saw the Manhattan Project, where everybody was isolated out at White Sands, and you had the brilliant minds come together, and they were insulated from the government and powers that be, who constantly wanted a progress report. That taking kind of that model and obviously scaled down, if you do have a project, many companies will put the brilliant minds together in a bullpen and say, you know, go at it. Let's see what you come up with in a couple months. Companies like IDEO will have people relocate, and they have all the modular furniture, and they relocate so that they're all sitting in the same bullpen or cubicle area or whatnot. And you can't always do this. For a lot of leaders, you're not spending your entire work life perhaps in innovation. If you are, that's great. If you're trying to do innovation for a couple hours a week in between your day job, then it's isolating and co-locating maybe in a conference room, maybe 1 hour a week. And whatever fires are raging, they stay outside the door, the cell phones are off and so forth, to avoid the interruptions and the disruption of flow. But creating that boundary from outside pressures, getting co-located, the highest performing groups are really autonomous. And so if you think of some of the great groups, I think it was a book by, I want to say, Warren Bennis. He wrote a book, and I think it was called Great Groups, and it talked about Pixar, it talked about the Manhattan Project and Skunk Works. They were not only co-located, but they were protected from the outside forces, executives, demands for constant schedule progress, and so forth. And this goes into, when we looked back at individual flow, that space that it's okay to fail. It's okay to not have an off day when you're playing with your band, or to bail on a wave and surfing and so forth. And to have that time to let ideas kind of percolate and not be beholden to a schedule. So the Allen flow, location.
And I just want to make a connection back to Steve Jobs, what we talked about a moment ago. You know, when he was terminally ill and knew his death was coming, one of his key projects was still designing the new campus for Apple. And he wanted to leave that as a legacy, a design that really encouraged, even though it's a massive facility and, you know, lots of employees, encouraged interactions where those innovative moments can happen because they're working together, right? And have a space where that's encouraged. And Google's trying to do some of the same things. And this notion that you are working together, and if you can create that some kind of water cooler type experience where you bump into each other and you have to interact more, even if you're not on the same team, there's that cross-pollination that is helpful for sharing new ideas.
That's interesting. I just heard recently the power of 150 people, and I'm sure you've heard of Gore and Associates, who make Gore-Tex, among a lot of other innovations. And the way their company is organized is very different. Everybody's an associate of Gore and Associates, and then project team leads have that title. But those are the only two titles you can have if you're at Gore. And people just gravitate towards whatever project they're kind of interested in. But what they found is that after about 150 people, we start to have too many degrees of separation. And I think it was Malcolm Gladwell mentioned this in one of his books about 150 people. And so Gore has actually made it that each building or campus really only has 150 parking spaces.
Hmm.
And so they really limit themselves right at about that number. And then they build another campus, not maybe across the street. But again, in our mind, that could be the Himalayas for all we know, how often do we actually walk across the street to a different building, even on our own campus. So there is a certain number at which humans can't quite keep those relationships that might be beneficial, whether it's people you're working with day in, day out, or weekly, or around the water cooler. But that 150 has been mulling around in my head. I think that's mm-hmm. fascinating.
Yeah, very good.
I will say a little bit, when I published the first version of the paper on group flow, I had a lot of feedback on remote teams. And mm-hmm. it's something I really wanted to address because, and again, our times now, a lot of people do need to work from home, but even if they can be in the conference room, there's always going to be people that can't be. You've got your
sure.
professor in Turkey, or your chief creativity officer in New York, and so forth. So how do you create group flow in a setting where you've got one or two or three participants on a speakerphone or WebExing in? And there's a couple of things that I've learned from my own experience and talking to others who successfully are leaders of completely remote teams where they have been working together for years and maybe have never actually physically met each other. And first, it's imperative to have a strong and focused agenda. This comes back to looking at the focus. And second, notify members in advance what will be required of them, why they are there. People need to know, why am I in the meeting? I'm not just in the meeting because every week we have this meeting. And I think it's good for the leader to consciously think about, who do I need in the room? Who do I think can bring something to the focus and what we're trying to do? Now, this doesn't mean tell people to come with the solution, because we want to build on the contribution of all members. So this idea of don't bring me the problem, bring me the solution. Well, if you're really looking for innovation, something new, different, you're addressing a decision that doesn't have an easy solution, you don't want people to bring the solution, but they can do creative thinking exercises on their own prior to the meeting. one of my favorite that's really simple is have them write out 50 ideas. And most leaders think if they've got 2 to 5 ideas, they're doing okay, and 5 to 10, they're great. But innovation really requires about 50 to 200 ideas to get something truly new. And so when you write out 50 ideas, and I'm not saying this is easy, and I've done this, you get the obvious ones. The first 10 or 15 are kind of obvious, and they get a little goofy. And then after around 25, 30 ideas, you start to get some that are definitely out of the box, but have some merit, and there's some gold to be mined. So if you can ask each of your team members to have written down 50 ideas, and in one setting, not over the course of a week, mm-hmm. In one setting, or once the group has assembled, set a timer for 20 minutes and have each person individually write out as many ideas as they can in 20 minutes, it starts to prime the brain. It gets people to have something that they can talk about and be engaged, especially because with remote teams, you're going to have people that are in a home office at 1 a.m. and there's not a lot of stimulation, or somebody who's been with clients all day and they're in a foreign hotel and the dinner and drinks aren't sitting real well and they're exhausted. So having something that they're bringing with them to the meeting is helps keep them engaged. Third, and people will balk at this, but many leaders have sworn by that who lead remote teams, is turning the phones off mute. It's too easy when we go on mute to start multitasking and to close the laptop. Now, if you really need to see some schematic or diagram or something on a WebEx, fine, but try to avoid using PowerPoints and be able to just turn the laptop, the computer off. Again, think about if you're sailing or playing basketball, if your phone goes off, you're no longer in the game anymore. Your head has left the building.
That interruption that takes you out of any hope of flow.
Right. And so putting these kind of seatbelts on people, if you will, to keep them focused is might be frustrating at first, but then when you start to see the productivity go up, the engagement go up, and things really starting to be done and some progress made, then that it doesn't seem like such a hard thing to do anymore.
Good. And did we cover that under part of location? Does this take us up to O now?
Yeah, that's location when you're not able to have everybody co-located.
Good. I want to make sure I didn't miss anything. So what is the O then in flow?
So the O is, again, like I said, it took all my creative power to come up with a simple acronym. But the O is really a physical visual where if you picture O as your round table. So who's around the table? Who's in the meeting? Your group composition. And so how do you pick your team? Now we go back to you need to match the skill level. As we match the skill level when we're doing something individual in flow. Again, as I said, if you're playing basketball, you're playing with NBA players, you'll probably get too frustrated and quit. Playing with 8-year-olds, you'll get too bored and quit. And so you want to have people that can challenge each other, but not overwhelm each other. If you're looking to get something done efficiently, yeah, you want a very homogeneous team. You understand the acronyms and the vernacular and each other's background and personalities, and you can make decisions quickly. But if you're really looking for innovation, look at the group composition. Bring in people of different generations, different genders, different backgrounds. Bring in, I come out of aerospace, and if we're looking at a fluid dynamics issue, bring in someone from the oil and gas industry, a biologist. They all deal with fluid flow, and bring in somebody from HR or your admin, a kind of a wild card. I was had the privilege of speaking with Dr. David Tanner. He founded DuPont Center for Creativity and Innovation in 1990. When creative thinking was just starting to go mainstream. Mm-hmm. And he said his groups were usually about 10 to 12 people and a good mix of backgrounds and genders. And he always wanted two people he always needed was the wild card, someone with a very different perspective, no knowledge of the program, no preconceived the knowledge of the program or the problem, no preconceived ideas. And then also what he called a decision maker. And I've expanded that to be not just the decision maker in terms of who's going to give a green light to go forward, but somebody who can maybe I see it as more of somebody who can cast vision and say, I think we're on the right track. Looks like we're making progress, or we're starting to lose focus, or we've hit a brick wall. Let's turn around. Let's try another direction. Mm-hmm. And so somebody who can give that feedback to the group and say, okay, let's keep pursuing this idea, or let's jump to something else. So in terms of having a decision maker, allowing the group to continue to progress and move forward. Again, as flow, we want feedback. We want to know that even if our project is a couple years long, we need that feedback. How are we doing? Are we progressing towards that goal? So somebody who's part of that team, and it might not necessarily always be the same person, but in every meeting, try to have somebody who can judge, what are our next steps? Do we continue to go forward with the thread that we're on, or are we starting to see some obstacles that we can't overcome?
So who's around the table? And some good resources I've found useful also for this team composition issue is the 10 Faces of Innovation. Which I think was Tom Kelly. I get the two brothers confused some of the time from IDEO. And also the A to F model of innovation, which was Philip Kotler, the marketing guru. And and I'm sure you've ran across others. These are good ones that talk about the different kinds of roles that help make innovation teams work because you have different people involved. Mm-hmm. So that gets us through O.
Yes. So we are now at W, and W is for your work tools. So if you were a builder, you'd have your saw and hammer and so forth. We're knowledge workers, we're creatives, looking for new concepts. And so our work tools are really creative thinking tools, communication, to facilitate communication and collaboration tools. So this is the first areas of focus, location, your group composition. That was really kind of setting the stage for innovation to have the most fertile ground. This is, now you got everybody, now what? We locked the door, the phones are off, we got the right people in the room, now what? And again, flow requires being able to be intensely focused and concentrating. And so there's a lot of tools out there. With creative thinking, we're often so entrenched in our patterns. So how do we get out of our patterns? And there, you can Google them. There's lots of books on creative thinking tools, and I teach some of them. One is that I like to use again is the 50 ideas of just writing it down, and that kind of comes out of research showing that brainstorming really doesn't work in the traditional way. I know IDEO has made it an art and it works in their culture, but whenever I'm speaking with groups, corporate groups, I always ask them, how many of you have gotten something really good out of a brainstorming session? And most people are a little bit shy and shake their heads and laugh. And what happens is people are still have a fear of putting ideas out there. Either they think they might look stupid or it might be perceived as going against the boss's agenda. Others find it entertaining and put ideas that are so far out of the box, you can't even see the box anymore, and there's not even a reality tether to the idea. And so this is where this 50 ideas on an individual basis has proved to be very useful. Or something simple like, what would Steve Jobs do? Or what would Oprah or Martha Stewart do or Einstein do? So things that sometimes get us out of our patterns. So creative thinking. There's also probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with Scrum, and Agile is, I'm finding it's hard to incorporate that methodology. It really goes against everything that I think we've all grown up with in the corporate world, waterfall schedules and so forth. But it's not just for software development anymore. In fact, and we're looking into how do you do that in hardware development. We've been looking at for major things like airplanes and satellites. How do you produce hardware and with the kind of the Scrum and Agile mindset, which obviously is becoming much more feasible with 3D printing and so forth, but also in the business applications and operations realms of using Scrum and Agile. And that's something I highly recommend getting an embedded coach on and really getting training on, because it is such a different mindset, and everybody and all the processes really need to be incorporated. You can't do a little agile. Right. It'll be doomed to fail. And there's a number of other tools and some of them I train in, but having a language, having a framework, it really helps with collaboration of everybody. A lot of times now we find that there's clashes between the generations. They think differently, they speak differently, they have different levels of experience, and you want both, again, talking about the group composition, you want the insight of both, but it needs to be done respectfully. So again, the business bookshelves are lined with suggestions and methods that your listeners are probably already familiar with or could look up. But this concept of having a framework when you do close the door and get the group together is very helpful.
Good. So thanks for taking us through the aspects of flow as applied to a group and giving us the acronym so we can all help remember this a little bit better. So we have our focus on what's important, the WTF, the what's the focus, the location, and then how do you create an optimal location for new thoughts to take place. O is this idea of the round table and who's actually there and the composition of the people involved. And then W for the tools, the work tools that are involved around how do you think a little bit differently, get out of your box and your mindsets and the collaboration tools and structures for the group working well. So I'm glad to know more about flow. And you provide really good examples along the way of some specific aspects, specific tools that people can pick up on too. So thank you for sharing that for us. And I know a lot of these ideas are in more detail in the paper that you originally wrote on group flow. And I will make sure people have a link to that to at least see the abstract. I think it was part of a journal. And so I think you have to pay for the article, right?
Yeah, that was written for the International Consortium on System Engineering in COSI. But I'm happy to offer that to those who are interested.
Great. Well, speaking of that then, for those who are interested, how can they get a hold of you and find out more about the work that you do then?
Well, my email is pretty easy. It's laurie@lauriebus.com.
And for listeners, that's bus with two S's.
With two S's. Thank you.
Laurie is A-L-U-R-I-E-B-U-S-S.com.
Yep. Lauriebus.com. Yes. Thank you. And also, I've formed a team and incorporated CL Solutions, which is CIEL.solutions as our URL, CL meaning sky in French. And so CL.solutions, laurie@lauriebus.com, and then I'm also on LinkedIn.
So I'll make sure that information gets into the show notes also, so make it easier for everyone to get to. And as listeners know, I always love getting innovation quotes, and I asked you to bring one. Can you share what the one that you liked and why you chose it?
One of my favorite is from Albert Einstein, that we can't solve our problems with the same thinking we use to create them. And it gets back to, you know, getting creative thinking tools. What are our work tools? Trying to get us out of our normal patterns. And sometimes we're so tired and rushed. We really need help in setting that space where we can get into the creative zone and flow.
It's one of my favorite quotes. I'm so glad you brought it and highlighted that one. Whatever problems we got into, obviously we need to think differently to get out of them. So appreciate Einstein for sharing that one with us too originally. Laurie, this has been great. Thanks for taking us through flow, and thank you for your time. And again, listeners, details will be in the show notes if you want to follow up with Laurie and also read more about the summary of what we discussed. Laurie, thanks so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Chad.
Thanks for listening. Please check out how the Idea Framework eCourse can double your success and your product success without feeling overwhelmed before it closes, and that's soon. It's closing on January 23rd, 2017. Go to theeverydayinnovator.com/idea. That's theeverydayinnovator.com/IDEA. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit our blog at theeverydayinnovator.com.